There.
I don't see your comment.
Right.
I guess that was so fair.
Okay. Pass over Gemara, and we can get started. We're holding on Memchet on the day's fifth line, by the two dots. All right, so we're still on the topic of the lung and the various possible traces in it. Keeping in mind, remember, you know, the Mishnah had only mentioned two things, one where the lung has a hole and the other where something is missing, where we discussed what the possibilities of missing is, and we're going to discuss that again, whether it means only something missing from the outside, like one of the lobes or whatever, whether it means some of the tissue on the inside is missing. But in any case, that from those two things, you get all these various details that we're talking about in the Gemara, because all of those lead to punctures or the results of punctures or something missing or whatever. Okay. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Itmar, we have a discussion of Amoroyim like this. Machat Shenimsis Bereya. If you find a needle or any other kind of sharp thing like that inside the lung. It's not a usual thing, but it's not a usual thing, but nevertheless, it could happen. Yeah. Now, the question is like this. If you find a hole in the outside of the lung, okay, obviously the animal's safe, nothing to talk about. The question is, if you find the needle somewhere in the middle of the lung, in one of the bronchi, as we're going to say soon, or embedded someplace in the material, in the tissue, basically the question, exactly, right. So Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar and Rav Chanina Machshiri, Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar and Rav Chanina all say that it's kosher, that the animal is kosher. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Rav Mani bar Pasish.
The thing of the bronchi is...
We haven't yet gotten to that. Hold on. Right now we're talking, we're going to actually talk about a case where it's inside one of the bronchi too. Right now we're actually talking about the case where it's embedded someplace in the tissue of the lung. So like it's piercing some of the, piercing some of the little air sacs, some of the alveoli, but that's the question basically. Did it come in there by piercing through the outside of the lung? Or, in this case, if we don't find any evidence of a hole, we can say that maybe it came in through the airways. So that's basically what we have to figure out. So Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar and Rav Chanina say it's kosher. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Rav Mani bar Patish, Rav Shimon ben Yochim, Taufi. These are the Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Rav Mani bar Patish, and Rav Shimon ben Yochim say it's trif. Before we go further, actually, with the analysis of it, which the Gemara is going to do, there's an interesting sidelight to mention on this, a little chassidish thing about it. During the 1930s, there were periods when the Friedrich Rebbe had to spend time in various sanatoriums and whatever because his health was very weak. So during a lot of that time, he had a lot of spare time on his hands because he had to take it easy. So therefore, he had time to write long letters. So from that period, we actually have a lot of letters that the Friedrich Rebbe wrote during those years that explain basic concepts in Chassidus and that tell stories from the early years of Chassidus and whatever. So in particular, there's a letter from one of those times from the summer, I think, of 1935 or something, an extremely long letter. 1935, yeah. That the Friedrich Rebbe wrote to the Rebbe, to our Rebbe and the Rebbezin, an extremely long letter in Igros Kodesh, printed in the third volume of the Friedrich Rebbe's Igros Kodesh. Just the part that's extant, not even the whole thing is extant, runs to about 120 pages. And that's just the part, where the original must have been even longer. Anyway, it's a story inside a story inside whatever. It's written in the style of Zichronus. If you've ever read Zichronus of the Friedrich Rebbe, you have the same kind of thing where he starts with one thing and then digresses to tell us the background of somebody else who's mentioned and eventually gets back. Anyway, here's a story of three friends, one of whom became a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov, and then eventually he meets up with his two old friends from his youth. And eventually, after a long period of time, convinces them to come to the Baal Shem Tov as well. Anyway, so again, there's like subplot, there's plots and subplots and subplots of subplots in there. At the very end of it, there's an episode where the Baal Shem Tov meets up with three brothers, two of whom are misnagdim and one is a chassid. And then at some point towards the end of the extant part, one of the Misnagdish brothers is sick. The Baal Shem Tov goes to be Mavaka Chayla, and the Baal Shem Tov tells him a vert on our piece of Gemara over here, the deeper meaning of what we're dealing with over here with a needle that's found inside the lung. And the Baal Shem Tov explains, so we don't have the whole thing extant because that's where the letter breaks off over there. But it starts with the Baal Shem Tov explains like this. A needle is as very it has to do with this week's Parish Show also. A needle is made out of iron usually. Iron is barzel in Hebrew, and barzel is the gematria amolik. Barzel is the gematria with imakol or whatever, with one or plus one for the word as a whole is the same gematria as amolik. Yes. So the reya, the lung, has to do with seeing. The word reya is related to the word re'iyah. In fact, later on, in Kesher and Aleph, we're going to learn today, Be'ez Hashem, that the Gemara itself makes an association between those things. So therefore, the idea
is that the lung is called re'iyah.
Yeah, and we'll see soon why. But anyway, the point is, and then the Baal Shem Tov explains further that also the word machat can be related to the word ches, sin. So therefore, what happens is you can have a person who looks with a bad eye on somebody else, which is he looks at the other person and sees averus in him. So like, so to speak, he sees a machat, a chet, with his re'iyah in the other person. But really what that caused is because he himself has allowed a molech to invade him, a molech being the gematria barzel. So therefore what happens is, so we have three amiroyim on each side of the issue, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, and Rabbi Chanina, saying that it's kosher, which the Baal Shem Tov explains over there. There's three names. Not so much, but the point is, there's three names. Each of their names has something to do with chesed. Whereas the three who say that it's trace, Reb Shimon Lakish, Reb Mani Bapatish, and Reb Shimon Oyakim, all of their names have to do with gura. And we know that generally chesed is to look for the good and to try to say it's kosher, and then gura is to be strict about it. So the machat is the most chesed. So that's the thing. So you have Reb Yochanan and Reb Elazar and Reb Shimon and Reb Chanina saying that it's kosher. In other words, there's a way out of this. There's a way to get a molech out of there. And you have the other ones who say that that it might be too deeply embedded, basically.
Chesed the initiator of gvura, or is gvura the initiator of chesed?
Neither. I mean, you really, chesed and gvura are separate things. I mean, they're intertwined because when in kedusha everything is intertwined. But nevertheless, though, I mean, they are fundamentally opposite forces in that sense. Anyway, at that point, the letter of the Frida could ever break off, so we don't know what the rest of the Baal Shem Tov's explanation was. But anyway, that's okay. Let's continue. Okay. So the Gemara says, Lema b'hokamitzvah. Should we say the underlying machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and company and between Rish Lakish and company is fundamentally like this? Now, when we have to consider, let's forget a second. Okay, let's assume that, fine, because we don't find any hole in the outside of the lung, so b'pashtus, that means it didn't pierce through the lung to get in there. When you think of it, how would a needle normally get in there? It could be because the animal swallowed it, and then it ended up piercing through one of the digestive organs and ending up in the
lung.
If it had pierced any of the digestive organs, then it would be trach. Yeah. If it went through the esophagus or through the stomach or any of the four stomachs or whatever, then it would be trach. On the other hand, the other possibility is that maybe the animal inhaled it by accident. It could happen, the same way as a person sometimes accidentally inhales food. The animal could have accidentally inhaled this needle, and therefore that's how it ended up in the lung. So should we assume the machlokas is like this? It's not so much a question of did it get there from the digestive system or not. Let's assume that all six amiroyim agree that it didn't. Because if it did, we'd see some evidence of it. There'd be a hole in the lung. So maybe the machlokas is lema b'hokamitzvah. Should we say that? And they're arguing on the following point. The three amiroyim in the second group, Rish Lakish and company, hold that when you have something missing on the inside of the lung, even though there's nothing missing on the outside, it would be considered chisaron. It's considered the lung is lacking something, therefore the animal is straight. Now, when you have a needle inside the lung, you have it pierced through some of the internal structure of the lung, some of the alveoli or whatever. And you have, practically speaking, around the needle over there, it ends up rusting, it ends up further damaging some of the tissue it happens to be near. So you could argue, according to them, the reason the animal is straight, again, not because there was a hole in the outside of the lung there isn't, but because of the deterioration that it causes on the inside of the lung. Umar
Sava came from the inside?
No, everybody would agree it came from the inside. Umar Sava lo shmei chisarin. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan and company would say that's not a problem. As long as from the outside it's intact, then we're okay. We discussed previously the question, when we say in the Mishnah, Hareya Shenikva Osha Chosra, that if the lung is missing something, then it's trace, does it mean only if it's missing from the outside, like there's a chunk of it missing from the outside, or a lobe missing, or what have you, or would it also be the case where whatever is missing is only on the inside? In other words, from the outside, the lung looks completely intact, and then you open it up and you find that some part of it is missing. But if we say that, if we say the latter, then we'd say in this case the animal is safe because you have around the needle over there, you have some part of the lung tissue is missing because the needle over there, it rusts in there, it says, yeah. As opposed to a coincidence of Yechon and a company, we would say, okay, lo shmei chisaron, it's not considered a chisaron, therefore it's okay. Therefore the animal is kosher.
The presence of the needle means that something's missing in the lung?
Yes, because you have, again, around the needle, you have the area around the needle, Rashi says, because what happens is the metal of it rusts over there, and therefore it causes some of the substance of the lung to rot away or whatever.
You can't see it like this.
But you can't see it from the outside. That's the point. So if we say that's the machlokas, then it would mean that they're arguing on this fundamental point. Is something missing on the inside of the lung considered something missing or not? The answer is loy. No, that's not necessarily the way to understand the machlokas. Dekula al mechisorin mechnim loy shmei chisorin. Maybe everybody agrees that if you have other examples where tissue of the lung is missing on the inside, it doesn't make the animal trace, which that would fit better with what we learned before. We learned before we had on Memzayin and Beis the case where the lung was liquefied and therefore some of it is missing also, and we said the animal is kosher. So therefore we don't have to say that any of these Amoraim would disagree with that concept.
When you say Mikhar means it's trace.
Meaning that would be trace, right.
So what's the
machlokas? Yeah, the machlokas. Rather would be Vahaka Vahaka Mithagi. So over here the machlokas would be as follows. Marsovar, the Chachamim, Rabbi Yochanan and company who say that it's kosher, they hold, you know how the needle got there in the first place? Simpoina nokat vasoi. What happened is the needle came in through the windpipe, the animal inhaled it by accident. It came down through the bronchi, and eventually, therefore, it landed over there someplace embedded inside the lung, because the bronchi divide finer and finer, and therefore, eventually, it got stuck someplace in the lung. But therefore, so it didn't pierce the lung coming in. It did. It went through the bronchi without piercing them, and therefore you're good. Well, Marisova, whereas Rish Lakish and company would say, Nekuvi Noki Vasoi. It could also be, it could instead be, rather, that it pierced through the esophagus or some other part of the digestive system and then wound up in the lung. Because after all, it's not usually you don't have food or anything that comes in, doesn't usually go in through the windpipe, it usually goes in through the esophagus. So therefore they say it's more logical to assume that it was in the digestive system in the esophagus and the stomachs or whatever at some point and then it pierced through there and wound up in the lung.
Once it's in, it's closer.
Then it would be possible. Then it would be trace. Then it would be trace because it pierced because it made a hole in the lung when it came in. Yeah.
Either way, it would be trace, wouldn't it?
No, in the first case, if we say that it came in through the bronchi, why would it be trace? It didn't pierce
it's
anything.
Some tissue.
But that's what we said. Chisorin mifnim lo shmei chisorin. That's what we said. That we could agree that we can say that all six amoraim agree that that's not considered chisorin unless you can see it from the outside. Okay. So therefore, continuing on the topic. So who is the halacha like? So Rashi mentions over here that first of all, whenever you have Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, the halacha is almost always like Rabbi Yochanan. So that would mean we'd be makel over here. Also, as the Gemara is going to say now, you have another case involving Rav Ami and Rav Asi over here who say that it's kosher. So the fact is, in other words, given that we don't see any holes in the lung, then we're not going to be machzik and iser. We're going to say that, yes, we found the needle over there. That itself is not enough to make a reyeser. That's not considered something that's not reason cause for suspicion that the lung may have been pierced, unless we find some evidence that the lung actually was pierced.
Such as what?
Either if we actually find it, so we inflate it and see if any
air comes out. Why would we hold this also?
They would say that, because they would say that maybe you have afterwards krum shalom machmas maka, it might have scarred over, and yeah, okay, but we're not worried about that. Fine.
But then we reach the same conclusion. Even if there's a krum, we inflate it and we see what's going on.
But if there's a krum, they would say you could have inflated it, it wouldn't help, because there's a krum there, it doesn't make it cautious. So therefore they would say it's straight, finish it,
cover it up.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara told the case, he machted the shtachach the chitucha dereya. One time you had a case a little bit different where they found the needle, but they found it in the lung only after the lung had been cut up. So that's a little different than before. Now we can't inflate it anymore. So what do we do? I saw the kamed Rav Ami, so they brought it to Rav Ami to pass in on it. And Rav Ami thought to say it's kosher, same reason as before, because like Rabbi Yochanan said, we should assume it came in through the bronchi. It was accidentally breathed in. Eistvei Rav Yirmiya v'itemir Rav Zrika, so Rav Yirmiya, or some say Rav Zrika, asks on Rav Ami, what about, let's go back to our mission, we learned Horeish and Nikva Oshachosra. We said that if the lung has a hole, or if part of, or if something of it is missing, then we said the animal is straight. And we have to figure out my chosro. What do we mean that it's missing something? Ilayim v'chos. Do we mean that there's something missing from the outside? In other words, that there's a hole where there's actual lung tissue missing from the outside. Well, you don't have your nisva, and that amounts to the same thing as having a hole. Doesn't need to repeat it. Elolav mivafnim. Obviously, chosro apparently has to be that there's something missing on the inside. Therefore, that would show that even if you just have lung tissue missing on the inside, where it's not, no, it doesn't look from the outside like there's anything missing, nevertheless, it would be traced. In that case, then, in this case, the animal should be traced. Because again, the needle being in there, it causes that tissue of the lung over there gets destroyed and is missing, and therefore we should say it's traced. So therefore, so Rabbi Yemi is saying, to Rabbi Ami, how can you say it's kosher? Well, okay, because based on the analysis of our Mishnah, it sounds like the word chaserah must mean that it's missing something on the inside. So Rashi points out at this point, Rav Ami could have equally well answered that, look, we had a discussion before about this point in the Gemara, whether chasera means from the inside or from the outside, and we said that maybe when the Mishnah mentions chasera, it's only because according to Rav Shimon there would be a difference. We would say that according to Rav Shimon, there's a difference between a hole where something is missing versus a hole where something is not missing. But really, we would say according to the Chachamim, there's no difference. However, but the problem was over here. So if the lung had still been whole, then Rav Ami could have just answered that chaseira doesn't mean what you think it means. It means only according to Rav Shimon is there a difference. The halacha is not like Rav Shimon, therefore it's fine over here. Even if there is lung tissue missing on the inside, it's okay. However, in this case, the problem was the lung was cut up. So now you can't be sure, okay, there is, it's true, it's still possible that it came in through the bronchi, but on the other hand, and if you had the rest of the lung there, maybe you would find there was a hole that it came into. So therefore, because he had that suffix, shadrul kamed rabbi yitzchak natcha. Hodr shadrul kamed rabbi yitzchak natcha. So therefore, so Rav Ami decided he didn't want to paskin about it. Instead, he had them send it to Rabbi Yitzchak bar natcha to see what he would say about it. To Rabbi yitzchak natcha. Again, sover lach shura. So he also thought to say it's kosher. Again, the same problem. And again, the same question. My chosra, if chosra means that it's missing something visible from the outside, and that's the same thing as nikra, that it has a hole. El olav mibufnim must mean that it's on the inside. The same question as before, that the word chosra of our Mishnah apparently means that there's lung tissue missing even though it's not visible from the outside. So the same challenge that he put up against Rav Ami, he put up against Rabbi Yitzchak Natcha. He said that obviously when the Mishnah means chasera, it must mean that something is missing from the inside, not from the outside. Otherwise it's redundant, right?
That's why it's a
trefer. Yeah, so therefore, sort of Yirmiya or Zrika is arguing it should be trefer, right? Well, Hoder Shadrua la Kamed Rav Ami v'Torfa. So he sent it back to Rav Ami, and Rav Ami decided that it was that after all, that's true.
And originally
Rav Ami wasn't sure again because there was a suffix on it. Now that he had sent it to Rabbi Yitzchak Natcha, and Rabbi Yitzchak Natcha accepted the same argument that Rabbi Yumiya was making, then Rav Ami said, in that case, I would say it's true at that point. Actually, Shitim Kubesis brings a different girsa, that they sent it again to Rabbi Yitzchak Natcha. That Rabbi Yitzchak Natcha, now that Rabbi Yumiya brought up the question to him, then he himself, after thinking to declare it kosher, he himself declared it trei. Anyway, on Amrimay, so they said to him, well, how could you do that? The fact is, we have before Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Hanina said it's kosher when there's a needle inside the lung. Why are you declaring it trei? Amalahen, so he answers them, okay, you know what? They said it's kosher. Because they know the basis for being able to declare it kosher. Because Rashi says, because after all, they had, in their case, the entire lung was before them. Since there are no punctures in it, so obviously you have to say it came in through the bronchi.
Yeah, it wasn't cut when they saw it.
Anan ne'ezatam nachshir. Over here, in our case over here, what reason could we possibly have to declare it kosher? Dilma yihav reya kaman minkava. And if we had the whole lung in front of us, we might well have found that there's a puncture in it. So therefore, no. So that's the thing. So when you have the whole lung is there and there's no hole in it, so fine. Then you have, there's no reisa. So then as long as you inflate it and then everything's good, then fine. Here we can't inflate it. And you have the equal possibility. Yeah, there's a cut. And
it was cut up.
And there's the equal possibility that it pierced and came in. Then you have to declare it trash because you have a topic over here. That's a whole different case. Then I'm back.
It's not trash, it's your
mock mirror. Well, it's trash, in other words, in the sense that we don't know. We can't say for sure that it's kosher. Yeah, okay, right, basically. Yeah, the Ramban, by the way, explains this last line a little differently. He says it's not so much a matter of a whole one versus a cut-up one. He says that the Rabbi Yitzchak Nachfa or Rabbi Ami is saying, you know what, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Chanina must have had a good reason to say that it's kosher and not worry about the possibility that it pierced the lung and came in. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that way of thinking, and therefore I can't say it's kosher. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Fine. Let's continue analyzing the case. Taima Delecta. So what are we telling? What are we saying over here? That Rab Ami or that Rab Ami or Rab Yitzchak Nafcha is saying the only reason I can't say it's kosher is because we don't have the whole lung in front of us. We only have a piece of the lung, and therefore we have no way of knowing whether there was a hole in the rest of the lung. Well, Ha Isa V'lem Minkava. Does that imply that they would say that if you did have the whole lung in front of us, and you didn't find any hole in it, does that imply Kshera, that we would say that it is kosher? The problem with that is that, fine. So let's say it didn't pierce the outside of the lung. Let's say also that we're going to say that Chisorin Mirknim Lo Shma Chisorin, that just because there's lung tissue missing on the inside doesn't make a trick. But don't we have another issue over here? The problem is that, fine, it came in through one of the bronchi, through one of the symphonies. But after all, you didn't find it in the stimpone, after all. Eventually, you found it in the lung tissue, which means at some point it had to have made a hole. It might have had to have pierced through one of the symphonies, one of the bronchi, and then gotten embedded in the tissue of the lung. Well, then, shouldn't that be a different problem? V'omer Rav Nachman, didn't Rav Nachman say, hai symphona dereya de inkiv, that if you have one of the bronchi in the lung has a hole in it, trefa. But forget about the whole question of chisorin mirasmim or not. Yes, as long as you have that it's not in the bronchi anymore, you find it in the tissue of the lung, that alone should be reason to make it today, because obviously, how did it get, even if you say it got there, that the animal inhaled it, it still had to pierce one of the bronchi to get to where it is. And Rav Nachman is telling us now that it's today. So how could we say it? No, we didn't have that count. No. The answer is ahula chavera. The answer is, when does Rav Nachman say that it would be chased? If the hole in the bronchus is right next to where it branches off to another one. So like here. The problem with that is that then you don't have anything to close up the hole. If you have, in the rest of the lung, the spongy tissue of the lung, if you have a hole someplace else in one of the bronchi, fine, the spongy tissue over there will seal it up effectively. And therefore, enough that it won't be traced. But if you have, right after a branching, if you have a hole in one of them, then the other one is hard. It doesn't effectively seal it. So therefore, you have a hole over there where you're going to have eventually eventually air is going to build up over there outside of the alveoli, and it's going to destroy the lungs. So yeah, so that's what Rav Nachman is talking about. In our case, we have no particular reason to think that it pierced the bronchi davke in a place like that.
The main bronchi or division?
No, the pashtus, we mean the divisions. Pashtus, we mean the ones that are large enough to be recognizable as bronchi. We're not talking about the ones that you can only see under the microscope. So if one of them is pierced, yeah, near where it branches off to another one, yeah, it'll be the animal will be traced. But otherwise not. So therefore, in the case of the needle over here, there's no particular reason to think that it dabs the pierced over there. Again, achzuki reyes toloy machzakinen, as he says. If we don't have a reason for that there's a chazaka to say that there's something wrong, we're not going to say it over here. Because the fact of the matter is that Rashi says if we didn't have the lung in front of us to check, or like the case we just had now where it's cut up, then there's too much reason to believe that, after all, needles normally come in through the digestive system, and therefore it came from there and got into the lung by piercing it, so it'll be traced. But here, where we find it inside the lung, and the only question is, did it pierce one of the bronchi, dafka, where it branches off from another one? We have no particular reason to think that it did. Therefore, we can say the animal is kosher. What about, though, okay, so you're telling me then that when it comes to the bronchi, that if you have one of them has a hole in it near where it branches off from another one, then we're saying it's chafe because the one next to it won't protect it, and therefore air will leak out. The problem with that is, don't we have another din that Rav Nachman said about a case of holes in internal organs, that high hadura decanter, Rav Nachman says, the winding part of the intestines, the hadura means that wine, kanta is the name of the fat. So what you have is actually you have with the small intestine winder, actually the colon, I think it is, whatever, winds round and round. It looks kind of like a snake. It winds round and round, and you have a layer of fat between one winding and the next. That's called the hadura de kanta. We're going to talk about it in a little more detail later on. It's the colon. So it winds round and round itself like a snake. In between each winding, you have a layer of fat. In that fat, actually, are the blood vessels when food is going through there, the nutrients and water and whatever are absorbed in there through those blood vessels and through that fat, whatever. So the point is. The point is that the here, let's see. There's a picture of it. Okay, so Rav Nachman says, okay, so there's a picture of another part of it. Whatever. The point is that you have these windings and you have fat between them. So Rav Nachman tells us that high hadura decanta the inkib lahabe chavre, if you have within that winding area, if you have one part of it gets punctured, but the puncture is next to where it's next to another part of the same thing. You have it winding round and round. So you have one of the coils has a hole in it, but the hole goes right into the next winding of it.
It's a coil.
Okay, it goes back and forth. Whatever. The point is that you still have like that. Yeah, okay, it's not that. Whatever. The point is, you have it goes back and forth like that. So you have one. It can be pierced in where you can have a hole in it in one place, whether you have a fistula between one part and another part. But it's all within the same organ. So Rav Nachman tells us, chayra. That's kosher. Not chayra, actually. So if you have one part of the winding that gets pierced and the hole goes into another part of the same winding, it's fine. Chavre megin alei. The other part protects it. So why are we not saying that here in the case of the bronchi in the lung? The answer is Amar Avashi.
It should be kosher.
Amar Avashi tshreifas kamadami la dadi. What are you trying to compare between different organs when it comes to hilchos tshreifas? Ain't anything but tshreifas zudayim lazu. When it comes to tshreifas, you can't say we draw an analogy between one organ and another. Because you have examples where you have examples where even within the same organ you can have, depending what place you cut it, you can have a place where you cut it and it's trace, and then you have another place where you cut it and it's kosher.
Well, within an organ.
No, but what it means is actually like this. Well, within one organ, in other words, what it means is like this. Rashi gives an example. Later on in the Masechta, in the fourth parak, we're going to talk about something called the Tzomis Hagidi. You have a collection of nerves or tendons or whatever. We'll talk about it over there that run down the middle of the leg of the animal near one of the major joints. And you have if those are cut or damaged or what have you, then the animal is chafed. So now you have, but on the other hand, for example, you could have, now let's say, for example, the tzomis hagidin is by this joint over here. So if you have the tzomis hagidin are damaged, or the leg is cut in that area of the tzomis hagidin, the animal is going to be chafed. But if you were to cut off the animal's leg above that, like over here in the middle of the thigh, then it would be kosher. Either eye is not tzomis hagidin, but you see from that, even within the same organ, sometimes you have that. Counterintuitively, that's where you. So the point is the same thing over here. You can't draw analogies between the intestines and the lungs. They're two different things, and there's a logical reason behind it because the lungs, the bronchi are hard over here with the winding coils over there. They're soft.
Why are they getting
the same as the gidin? Because the same as the gidin. Those are vital for the life of the animal, and therefore, if they're cut or damaged or whatever, then it's changed. But if that whole area, including them, is removed, then the animal is cut off. if the leg is cut off above that, the animal can still be kosher. So we see from that, therefore, that Rav Ashi says you can't draw analogies like that. So the same thing. You could say there's a difference with the lung, one of the bronchi having a hole in it where it's near another one will be traced. The other one doesn't seal it up effectively. Whereas when it comes to the hadrut of the cancer, to the colon over there, then not. Okay. Fine. Another case. One time there was a case where they found the needle in the large bronchus of the lung. So here we're talking about that it's not like before where we found it someplace in the spongy part of the lung, where then, as we just said, it must have pierced one of the bronchi, larger or smaller or whatever, to get there. Here you found it actually inside one of the bronchi, or inside the large bronchi. So they brought it to these three chachamim, the Shlokish, Ramani Bapatish, and Rishim Ben Yakim, who before declared it safe. And in this case, they didn't outright say it's safe, but they didn't want to say it's kosher. They didn't want to say it's kosher. Heter, like Amri Ba, they didn't want to say it's mutter kishmat hayu, because they were still following their logic from before, that when we have a suffix over here, there is, after all, the possibility that maybe it got there from the digestive system, and therefore that the animal would be traced because it made a hole in the lung as it came in. So just because we found it in the bronchi, they would say doesn't necessarily prove that it didn't do that. Kishmat hayu, according to their teaching, according to what they said before. It's the same logic. It's not normal for needles to get into the lung through the airways. It's more normal for them to get in by the animal swallowing them and then going from the esophagus or whatever into the lung. So therefore, in this case, just because you found it in the bronchus doesn't make that any better. So therefore, they didn't want to say it's heter. On the other hand, isur nami like amriba. On the other hand, they didn't want to say flat out that it's ulcer, because after all, kibin de simpona rabba ishtaka, because this is different. You found it within the large bronchus. There's much more reason to assume how did it specifically get into the bronchus and no place else. If it had just come in from the outside, it would have just landed someplace else randomly. So therefore, this gives more reason to assume that after all, maybe it was inhaled. But nevertheless, since there is still the possibility that it was all that instead it was swallowed and then pierced the esophagus and the lung to get there, then they didn't want to say it's mutter, but they also didn't want to say flat out that
either the consideration is that it was swallowed and then pierced the esophagus and then in any case it was traced.
Right.
Or it was inhaled. So since you have a suffix,
That's the thing. So in the case before where it was embedded in the lung, then they were saying that where it was actually embedded in the lung, lung tissue. Then they said, forget about any possibilities. Yeah, well, whatever. The point is, they said that therefore there's a very little reason to think that it came in through the airways. Much more likely that it came in through the esophagus and then pierced the esophagus and the lung to get there. Therefore, it's traced. On the other hand, here where you find it in the bronchus, okay, there's more of a reason to think that maybe it was inhaled. Well, in the large bronchus, obviously it's closer to the airway, right? It didn't get very far, right? So the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Chanina, that in and of itself the it is kosher if you find it inside the lung. On the other hand, if the lung was cut up, then like we said before, no, because we don't know what it would have been like before it was cut up. And if you found it in the bronchus, then for sure it's kosher. Yeah.
If it's found in the lung close to the
Even if it's close, well, if it's in the bronchus, then it's not close to the chest wall.
Right, if it's close to the chest wall, then what?
Then nothing. I mean, you know, as before, what we do is we inflate the lung, we inflate the lung, and we see what the results are.
If it's in the large bronchi,
then we're okay. Then if it's in the large bronchi, then it's okay.
Hold that if the needle goes.
No, so if
on a saddle, let's say between two large bronchi, it's trace.
I'm not.
Like Rob Nachman said.
Oh, so that's a different matter. If we find there's a hole in one of the bronchi, then it's not, and it's near where it branches off from another one, then yes, it's trace. Okay.
If it's a hole in the bronchi that doesn't branch,
if there's a hole in a bronchus where it branches off from another, near where it branches off from another one, then the animal is going to be traced.
Right.
But that's a separate game. But here, as far as the situation with the needle, so like this, that I'm going to summarize, is that if you find a needle in the lung, in other words, like you feel that there's one inside, but you're, you know, what you do is you inflate the lung. If no air comes out, then you know it came in from the airways. Right. Otherwise, yeah. On the other hand, if the lung had been cut up ahead of time, then you, okay. All right. Fine. Another case. We were talking about the lungs, now we're going to digress a minute and talk about the liver, because it's a similar kind of case involving a needle. One time they found the needle in a cut-up liver. Now the liver is a little bit different than the lung. First of all, we learned before that even if large parts of the liver are missing, it's not traced unless you have
it. It can live
as long as it has a caseus in one or in the respect in the two or three respective areas where it needs to be. And also, by the same logic, also you can't say you can check the liver. You can't inflate it, so there's no way to, you know, it's not like it would be relevant to check whether it pierced it or not. Well, so like this. So over my grade of Yosef Lemitrofa. So my grade of Yosef thought to say that it's traced, because again, how does a needle come to be in the liver? Must be again that it got into through the digestive system and then it pierced something in the esophagus or the stomach or what have you and wound up someplace in the body cavity and then eventually got stuck into the liver. Therefore, it would be traced. Amalei Ravashi. So Ravashi says why? Ilu ishtakach bebitzur kahai gavna. And let's say you found a needle like that stuck into the muscles someplace. Have a tartar now, would you also say that it's traced? In other words, the point is, just because there's a needle there doesn't necessarily show that it had to pierce something in order to get there. It still might have gotten there without piercing anything, without piercing any vital organ, that is. Yeah. Ela Omarabashi. So Ela Chazina. So we have to look at the position of the needle. E kufalabar, we check like this. We see a needle has two ends. A needle has a sharp end and it has a blunt end. So what we do is like this. We check and see which direction in the liver is the needle facing. E kufa levar, if the blunt, the kufa means the blunt end, like the end with the eye end.
It's not the sharp side, not the point, but the other end
that you put the thread into. The blunt end. If that part is levar, if that one is sticking outward, then what it means, so how did it get into the liver? Nekuvi nakivasoi. Then indeed it means evidently that it pierced something in order to get into the liver, and then therefore the animal is chafed. Nekuvi nakivasoi, then it pierced and made its way there. E kufa legav, on the other hand, if the blunt end is inside, If the blunt end is inside, meaning facing towards the inside of the liver, then that means, in other words, normally a needle would travel point end first, because that end is thinner. Therefore, what is more likely to have happened, simpona nocket vasoi. Therefore, what may have happened is that it managed to reach there through one of the symponas, meaning through the symponas we said before, we were using before in the lung in terms of as branches, but more generally it means all that it means. It means the bronchi, the blood vessels or whatever. So the point is, in other words, the very fact that you find it with the point sticking outward where normally it will travel point first means it's more likely it didn't pierce the esophagus or what have you in order to get there, because then the sharp end of it, which pierced the esophagus, would have traveled ahead and it would have gotten into the liver first. So like this, when you find it, by the way, and Tosfos stresses over here that, okay, so here actually you have Rashi and Tosfos learn a little differently over here. Rashi learns that the case where it's kosher is if you have the blunt end is embedded in the liver and the sharp end is sticking out of the liver. So you could argue it's sticking out. On the other hand, maybe it pierced something else, but not necessarily. If we don't find in whatever's next to the liver, if we don't find any piercing, then the how did it get there? Again, it's not likely then that it pierced something in the digestive system and made its way to the liver, because if it did that, then you would expect it to be sharp end. The sharp end would be in the liver. Yeah, the point of it would be in the liver. So like this, what it may mean, therefore, is it made it into the liver by going through the by going through the airways and or the and by going through a combination of the airways and the blood vessels. But how exactly would it be able to do that? How exactly would it be able to do that? So he has a bit of a discussion over here in Colon Illuminated about the possibilities behind it. We learned a few days ago, we learned back on Menheim and Bays, the Gemara had an expression saying that there are three pipes. We talked about there about the three pipes, which we said that might be the aorta and the pulmonary vein and the whatever. And the way that Rashi said it over there, the surface meaning of Rashi over there made it sound like one of them branches off from another, which it's a little hard to say because physiologically they don't actually branch off each other. But basically what it means is depending on how you group, depending where you consider any one of them to start and end, and they might be grouped. The Gemara might be grouping them more according to their appearance than according to their function. In other words, you obviously don't have, let's say, for example, that the windpipe, which carries air, doesn't directly connect to the aorta, which carries blood. But you have those, you know, there you have those, you know, those veins, because there's veins.
There's
veins that go from one to another or whatever. The point is, there is the possibility, again, given that we found the needle in this position, it may have somehow managed to take an unusual route like that to be able to actually, that it was actually inhaled into the lung, like we said before, and then it made it out from there into the heart, and from there through the blood vessels out to the liver. It's a very odd thing that it should be able to do that, but nonetheless, though, the fact that we find it in this position in the liver seems to indicate like that.
Through the heart?
Yeah, basically. Well, not the heart itself per se, but whatever the blood vessels that lead in and out of the heart. Yeah. So yeah. The point, yeah. So again, it would be a very unusual thing for it to do, especially because in some places it actually has to go against the flow of blood. But nevertheless, the fact that you find it with the blunt end in the liver and the sharp end sticking out suggests that that's how it came. Because otherwise, how did it manage to get there? So
put across the diaphragm directly into the liver.
But first of all, a hole in the diaphragm doesn't necessarily make the animal chafe anyway.
That's the point.
Okay, so then.
So it went through the diaphragm.
But still, you wouldn't have it. The sharp end of it would be in the. So still, how would you have the sharp end of it sticking out of the liver? So he describes over here basically what it might have had, something like this. So the animal inhales it. It goes into the bronchi of the lungs.
Right.
It goes into it manages to get from there into branches of the pulmonary artery. Then it goes to the heart, it gets from there into the vena cava, which goes to the liver, and therefore so okay, it has to pierce the liver in order to get in there, but fine, a piercing in the liver doesn't make the animal chafe. And the other one is that it pierced someplace inside the pulmonary artery, but okay, that was inside the lung, and we said before that the tissue of the lung is able to seal up the hole. So therefore, it could have managed to do it. So again, it's a rather unusual thing that it should be able to do that, but the fact that it's like that suggests that that's exactly what happened. Therefore, we don't have to say the animal's true. Therefore, we can say the animal's kosher. On the other hand, if you find, sort of Ashi says, because, you know, we have to look at the situation. If the blunt end of the needle is outward, in other words, the sharp end is embedded in the liver, Levarim is outward, then the likelihood is that the needle pierced the esophagus or what have you to get to the liver, therefore the animal's straight. But if the blunt end is inside, meaning again, Rashi says embedded within the liver and the sharp end sticking out, then there's a likelihood or the possibility at least that it came there by going through the symponus without making the animal straight.
Because the sharp end
is outside, sticking out of the liver, outside. And the blunt end is inside the liver. So it couldn't have gotten in there. By piercing the esophagus or whatever, and getting to the liver, because then the sharp end would be in the liver. So therefore, we can assume that it got there by way of the blood vessels to the liver. Mm-hmm. Okay, Tosfos explains somewhat differently that we're not talking about that any part of it is sticking out of the liver. Tosfos learns we're talking about the whole thing is embedded in the liver, but still, is it facing towards or away from the blood vessel, from the major blood vessels that run into the liver? Same idea, but a little bit different than Rashi, who's saying that the sharp end is actually sticking out, or the blunt end is actually sticking out. Tosfos learns that we're talking about over here where the whole thing is embedded in the liver. And then we're just looking at the position. And we're just looking at the position of it, which direction is it facing.
And in which case
same idea. In other words, that's the same idea. That depending which direction it's facing shows whether it came from the digestive system or not. Yeah, no, whether it's towards the vena cava or away from it. Okay. Vahani mili baal limsa. Now, all that is only talking about, though, if the needle's large end is a blunt, if it's a large needle, so that therefore the blunt end of it is not able to make any holes. Avok tinta, but if it's a small needle, like the sewing needles we have nowadays, even the blunt end of a sewing needle is pretty sharp. Loishna kofal lagav, loishna kofal abav. Doesn't matter whether the blunt end is inward or outward. Either way, the kovinok is vasoi, the likelihood is that it pierced the esophagus or what have you to get to the liver. Because even though the blunt end of a small needle is sharp enough to be able to pierce internal organs. By the way, you have some of the Rishonim talk about up at the Rashba, talks about the question later on in the Perek in a couple of blocks. We're going to say that if you have, for example, a thorn or a splinter anywhere inside the body cavity, then it makes the animal chase because the likelihood is that it pierces one or another internal organ. So why over here, if you have a needle over here in the liver, fine, maybe we're not worried about that it pierced the liver because the piercing of the liver doesn't make it chase. What about isn't there the likelihood that it pierced something else? And he explains basically that when you have a thorn or something like that, a foreign object in there that obviously stabbed its way in, so yeah, who knows what it pierced on its way in. Here, on the other hand, you have something that seems to have gone through the digestive system, so therefore it's more likely that it went in gently rather than stabbing in all of a sudden and possibly piercing various organs.
So therefore,
you have cases where it could be kosher, like we just said. Okay, the Gemara asks, "Umayshna mimachat shenimtis ba'ovi beis hakosis." Why should this be different than a case like this? Now, here we're going to talk a second about the beis hakosis. We mentioned before a couple of times that an animal has four stomachs. The second one of them is called the beis hakosis. In English, it's called the reticulum because it has a double wall, and in particular, the inside of the wall has like honeycomb shapes all over it. So it has a double wall. So if you find the needle embedded in there, in the thickness of the wall of the beis hakosis, mitzad echad kshera, if you find it that it's stuck in only from one side, in other words, that it only pierced the internal wall, but not the beis hakosis has two layers, just like we said before. The brain has two layers over it. We said before that the lung has two layers.
The
beis hakosis has no equivalent in a human being, so we don't chew our cud. But it's a stomach that has a double wall. It has Okay. Anyway, the point is that it has a completely different function. Okay. The point is that it has a double wall. So if you have a needle that pierced through one of those double walls, then it's still kosher because the other one still protects it. Mishneh blood in Shreifa, but if it goes all the way through, then it's safe. The point is that there we don't say Valoyamrin and Lechta Ikufa Labar Ikufa Lagav. We don't say over there that we should consider which direction the needle is facing. Where after all, there don't you have the same problem also that maybe it came from maybe the animal swallowed it and therefore it started out inside the beis hakosis and then pierced it from the inside. But on the other hand, maybe what happened is instead it came through the animal's flank and pierced through the muscles over there and then came into the beis hakosis. And then even though you only find it on the inside, maybe it actually pierced from the outside. Shouldn't we say we should be looking at the position? Is the blunt end inward or outward and decide on that basis? If you have the sharp end that's facing inward, it's more likely that it came in from the outside. Therefore, the beis hakosis should be traced. The answer is Amri. The answer is not quite the same thing because Hossam, in that case, given to Ikka Oichlo Mashkim, because the difference is in the beis hakosis, you have food and drink all the time. Whatever the animal eats and drinks winds up in the beis hakosis for a period of time. Ema Oichlo Mashkim Dachkua. So even if you find that the point is sticking out into the beis hakosis, and the blunt end is facing outward, doesn't necessarily mean that it pierced through the side of the animal and came in from the outside. It could be just as well that it happened to be positioned like that in the Beis HaKodesh when a gob of food came and pressed it into the inner layer of the Beis HaKodesh. And that's why now you find it where the sharp end of it is sticking up into the Beis HaKodesh.
In other words, the food changes direction?
Not the food changes direction. No. In other words, what you have is like conceivably the animal swallowed this needle. It went into the Beis HaKodesh. And by the way, it's easy to understand how it would end up to begin with in the Beis HaKodesh, because basically you have, if you look at the arrangement of the stomachs of the animal, you see that the end of the esophagus is really basically directly over, it's pretty much directly over the Beis HaKodesh.
Right.
So when the animal eats regular food, it goes first into the keres. It goes sideways this way and goes into the keres. But when you have something heavier, like a needle, it's more likely to drop directly into the Beis HaKodesh.
Which is
this over here. Yeah, no, it's this over here.
Uh-huh.
And it's more likely to drop straight in there. As a matter of fact, that's a fairly common thing because animals eat pretty indiscriminately and they can easily end up eating nails or other such things. So it is actually a trapha that has to be checked for regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Like trapha in the lungs. And he mentions in here over here that veterinarians have a name for it. They call it hardware disease. Anyway, the point is that we can imagine like this. The animal swallowed the needle. Not forget inhaled, like you said before. Now we're talking about swallowed it together with its food like it usually does. It landed in the Beis HaKodesh with the blunt side down. At that point, fine. There's no hole in the Beis HaKodesh. Then the next thing that comes in after it, a big gob of food comes down there and pushes it down. So now the blunt end of it pierces the inner wall of the Beis HaKodesh. But you still have the outer wall is still intact. Therefore, it's okay. We don't say later on when we check the animal and we find this needle sticking up from the Beis HaKodesh. We don't have to say, oh well, that means that it probably pierced through the belly of the animal and came up into the Beis HaKodesh from the bottom and made it straight. No, we don't have to assume that. It's more likely that the blunt side got pushed down into the lining. So over there, we don't make distinctions between the direction of it, whereas with the liver, we would. Okay. Another case, how who machta di shtaka the simpone rabba de kavka. It once happened, they found a needle in the large simpone. Again, a simpone means some kind of tube. So in this case, it means a large blood vessel of the liver. There are actually two large blood vessels in the liver. One of them is the vena cava that we've been talking about here and there, a large vein that brings blood from the whole back half of the animal back to the heart and passes through the liver. And then you have a vein called the portal vein, which goes specifically between the liver and the heart. Anyway, it was in one or the other of them. I think Gavin Macholikus are showing him which one. Anyway. Hunamar braided of Idi Torif. So Hunamar, the son of Rav Idi, held that treif because you found it in the Simpone Rabba. There's a good chance that it made a hole because again, more likely, how does it end up inside the simpone of the liver? Same as before. Most likely, the animal swallowed it and then it pierced something in the digestive system and therefore it wound up inside the liver. Rav Ada Baman Yomi said that it's kosher because again, since you find it inside the blood vessel, so again, like we said before, sort of like we said before with the bronchi, with the lung, it's not likely that just at random it would end up there if it came in from the outside. If it just came in from the outside by way of the esophagus or whatever, it would have just landed randomly someplace in the liver. More likely, it got there to begin with through the blood vessels, and in that case, it's not true. Okay. Well, a combination of the windpipe and the blood vessels, like we said before. Yeah, it could go through, it could be inhaled and then go through and then go into the pulmonary veins and then from there to there and then from there to the vena cava, whatever, anyway. Okay. Also Shailua Ravina. So they came at and asked Ravina, what's the halacha in this case? What's the bottom line? Is it kosher or not? Amalahu. So he says to them, not only is definitely kosher, but shkilu glima de trufoi, take away the coats of the ones who declared it treif. Meaning, Rashi says, what happens is that whoever declared it treif, in this case Hunamar, had actually, as we said, what happens with treif meat, like kelef hashlichonos, so you throw it to the dog. So he went ahead and did that, And as we learned before, when a dayan does that, if a dayan paskins wrongly and ends up actually causing directly a hezek to the person by taking the animal and feed it to the dogs, then he has to pay. So therefore, Rav Miner is saying, take his coat in payment for it because he's liable to pay because he was wrong in declaring it to him. Right. Another case.
And he was wrong because?
Because the halacha is that it's kosher, that again, since you found it in the simpa, since you found it in the blood vessel, there's very good reason to assume that it came in there by way of the airways and the blood vessels rather than by way of the digestive system. Because if it came by way of the digestive system and pierced through the esophagus or the stomach or what have you, you would expect it to find it in some random place in the liver, not davka in the blood vessel of all places. Oh, well, he mentioned, in other words, he's obligated to pay, and if he doesn't have enough money to pay, then he'll have to take his coat to pay for it. Because, first of all, it didn't necessarily pierce the blood vessels that would make the animal trace. Again, in the scenario that he was mentioning before, over here in Kulin Illuminated, you found it in one of the blood vessels. No, that's the point. You found it actually inside the blood vessel, and like he said before, over here in Kulin Illuminated, maybe what it means is, that it had to get from the airways to the blood to the circulatory system somehow, but it did that inside the lung, where we said before, the punctures inside the lung don't necessarily make the animal trace, because the rest of the lung material, the rest of the tissue of the lung seals up the hole. It could work. Another possibility when he says take away his glima, another possibility might be we find in a number of places in the Gemara that a glima was a special article of clothing that was given to Talmid Chachamim as a distinction to show that they're Talmid Chachamim. So maybe what it also means is Ravina is saying about whoever declared this trait, he's not much of a Talmid Chacham and doesn't deserve to wear a glima. Anyway. All right, another case. Hahi kashisa de ishtakach b'mora. One time, in an animal, they found a date pit inside the gallbladder. So we learned before about the gallbladder. It hangs off the liver. But what happened is, so in this case, they found a...
Kashita means
a date pit. Right. So they found a date pit inside the mora, inside the gallbladder. Now, how did it get there? Again, one possibility might have been that it pierced something to get in there. And remember, we learned at the beginning of the Perek, we said that Rabbi Yosi B'Yehuda says, and the halacha is like him, that a hole in the gallbladder makes the animal trace. So, but on the other hand, maybe it got in there by way of the liver. So, and in that case, it could have gotten to the liver the same way as the needle did, but like we said before. So, Amar Rav Ashi, Ki Havein and Beirav Kahana, when we were in the issue, when we, Tamidim, there might have been a hole, but then maybe it healed over, but a healing over is still no good. Yeah, it would still be tricked. Yeah. So, Ki Havein and Beirav Kahana, so Rav Ashi says, when we were Tamidim in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Omar, so Rav Kahana told us, a case like that, here there's no question it must have gotten there by way of the blood vessels, because then into the liver, and then from there, and then from there into the mara. Because the point is, Rashi says, because it's not the kind of thing, a date pit doesn't have any sharp edges. So there's no real possible way to assume that it could have made a hole in the digestive system and then made a hole in the gallbladder and be able to get in there. It's not, it does, unlike a needle before, which has a point and it could pierce its way in. Again, the idea would be, like before, that the animal accidentally inhaled it and it made its way into the lungs and then from there into the blood vessels that go between them.
How do you go from lungs to blood vessels?
Same way as we said before.
You have to pierce into the blood vessels.
Okay, so you have it wormed its way through, as the Gemara is going to say in a second. So 1 second. But the point is that there's no way it could have possibly pierced anything to get there because it's not sharp enough to.
So then how would it have gone from the lung to the blood vessels?
Okay, so it would have managed to make its way through the pulmonary arteries or whatever. I don't know. But whatever. Now, Rav Ashi continues that, you would think like this. What happens, maybe what you do is, so you try to see, okay, well, ultimately, fine. You're assuming it came in through the blood vessels or whatever, and then got into the liver and from there into the gallbladder. So why don't we look and see? Is it something? I mean, there's a duct between the gallbladder and the liver. So see if it's able to fit through that duct. If it can't fit through, then obviously it couldn't have come through that duct. Then we have to assume that somehow or other it did get in from the outside. Nevertheless, that doesn't prove anything. because even if now you can't get it out of the gallbladder by way of that duct, all that means is mirbul hu derovelay. All it means is, how did it get there in the first place? It did get through the duct. However, it like wormed its way in gradually as the animal moved around and then and walked around and whatever. But over time, it sort of gradually wormed its way through, even though right now it's too narrow to be able to get out again. But there's still strong reason to think that it did that rather than piercing to get in, because the fact of the matter is it doesn't have a sharp enough edge to pierce anything. However, the Gemara says, v'hani mili d'dikla. Now, that would only be true if the thing that we found in there was a date pit. Abel de zeta, but what if instead we found in there an olive pit? That's different. Mivza baza. An olive pit has sharp points. So, therefore, it's much more likely that, like a needle, an olive pit has a sharp edge, has a sharp point. No, an olive itself is round, but a pit. No.
A date is more...
A date pit is rounded on all sides. But it's not round like an avocado seed, but it doesn't have any sharp edges as opposed to
elongated.
It's elongated, but still doesn't have any sharp edges in it. An olive pit does. An olive pit has one sharp point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, if you find an olive pit in there, it's much more likely that
makes a difference which kind of olive.
No, the batch is not. I don't know. So therefore, so Rashi says the opinions that said before, therefore, that a needle in the in the liver would make the animal chafe, they would say the same thing over here in the case of an olive pit by the same logic,
because
the pastures it pierced. On the other hand, Tosfos says On the other hand, Tosfos says it's not nearly the same thing. When it comes to a needle, the fact of the matter is a needle is a very thin thing. So therefore, there's more of a chance that it managed to make it into the liver in such a way that whatever may have pierced to get in there is not necessarily something that would have made the animal trace. Therefore, we have reason to assume it's kosher if the blunt end is inside there or whatever. Okay. On the other hand, Tosfos says here with an olive pit, it would be worse. Like you said, the fact of the matter is a pit of any kind is not really going to very easily get through the airways and then the circulatory system and whatever to get into the liver and then into the gallbladder anyway. There's a much greater possibility that in the case of an olive pit that it really did make a hole in something in the esophagus or whatever and then make its way to the liver. So therefore, Tosfos says that even Rabbi Yochanan and company, who in the case of the liver before, in the case of the needle before, were saying that it could be kosher, here in the case of the olive pit, they would say it's trace regardless. And the halacha, I believe, is like this. Yeah. Okay. Getting back to the lung. Before we continue, so we're still in the middle of discussing trace of the lung, but now the Gemara digresses a second to tell us something about why the lung is called that. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lama nikra shma reya. Why is that organ of the body called the reya? Shemeira esainayim. The reason is because it enlightens the eyes. In other words, it's good for. In other words, it's something about the lung is healthy for a person's eyes. So the question is, what do we mean? Is it that eating lung is good for a person's eyes and it improves his eyesight or whatever, or do we mean that if you take the lung and grind it up and mix it with other ingredients, that it makes an effective potion for the eyes? Which one do we mean?
Eating it or
mixing it with other things and using it as a medicine. Toshma, the Amr of Huna Bar Yehuda, Avza Bezuzah, you can buy a goose for a zuz. Reya, the Reya Dijaba, the Reya, the lung of it, though, you would have to pay four zuz for. Now, so let's continue. How does that show us what the situation is? The Takadadach Lachila. Now, why would the lung cost so much more than the goose itself? The pasture is because the lung is something extra healthy that people need it for their eyesight. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is telling us specifically that somehow there's something about the lung that's good for the eyesight.
Yeah.
If you're telling me that all it is you have to eat lung and then it's good for your eyesight, in that case, the pricing wouldn't make sense. If the idea is just that you're supposed to eat the lung, then why would anybody pay four zuz for it? Link it the zuz of Alecho. Buy the whole goose for a zuz. Then you have the lungs are included with the goose, and then you can eat them. Why would you be paying three zuz extra just for the lungs? Ella al yidei samlanin. Obviously, the answer is that what Rabbi Yochanan must mean is it's not the lung by itself isn't particularly good for your eyes, but when you grind it up and mix it with other ingredients, then it's good for your eyes. So therefore, so now we understand, therefore, sort of Hunabai Yehuda is telling us like this. The goose itself calls Somya Zud, but if you want to use the lung for its health-giving properties for your eyes, be prepared to pay four zuzin, because you're not just paying for the lung itself, you're paying for all the other ingredients that have to be mixed in and compounded with it.
But the lung is not, the lung is not, hasn't got the before.
Right.
And you got
right. Well, I'm sure, yeah. I don't know. Okay.
What made them believe that the lung is good for the
I don't know. I mean, the Gemara is telling us it, and I guess it was a known thing that people were willing to pay four zuzim for it. So I guess they must have. It could be
four zuzim because it tastes good. Or
no, because again, they're not using it as they're using it as like to smear on the eyes or whatever, or the potion. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, it could also be an Ashanu Akivim. It might be that's one of those things
that
you don't know
you look at
the medicinal
the
value of. Now,
but the Shabbos is good for the eyes.
This is also true.
You're looking for the eyes.
Fine. All right, anyway, let's go on. Okay. What about, here's a case. Suppose that when you're checking the lung, you find a hole in it. However, you find the hole in the area where the tabach, where the sholchot, or the bodik, had massaged it with his hand. So in other words, maybe there was a hole there while the animal was alive. But on the other hand, maybe just maybe with the bodik, when he was checking the animal, accidentally made a hole in it. Now, what do you mean, heichad mash mashiyodet tabcha? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it may mean in the narrow part of the chest. In other words, when you think of it, the chest starts out narrow, closer to the neck, and then it widens as you go further back. So therefore, heichad mash mashiyodet tabcha, Rashi's first explanation is, we're talking in the narrow area, closer to the front of the animal. So there, if the bodik is not careful when he sticks his hands in to check for things, he may accidentally rip something with his fingernails as he's doing it. Then Rashi says, the other explanation is, the explanation that Rashi himself prefers is no, it doesn't mean davke in that area. Anywhere in the lung where it's likely that the guy was a little careless and accidentally made a hole. No, for what? No, the point is that if we find a hole over there, and right, exactly, it doesn't show that it's straight. Yeah.
So, it could be that he did it.
Well, actually, that's the question. Hold on. The question is, like, if we find a hole in such a place, so it may have been caused while the animal is alive, but it also may have been caused by the bodik being a little careless, can we attribute it to the bodik, and in that case, the animal is kosher, or should we not, and therefore we would say the animal is straight? So a machlokes from Adar bar Nosson Omer Talinan.
What's the machlokes in a chassid d'oras? I would not say.
Because Rav Adar bar Nosson Omer Talinan. Rav Adar bar Nosson says we can attribute it to the bodik, therefore the animal is kosher. Marzut Rebed Ramari Omer Lo Talinan. The Hilchasa Talinan. The halacha is we can attribute it to the bodik, and therefore the animal is kosher. Now you're saying because the suffix d'oraisa. So this is I mentioned at the beginning of the parak. The Rambam lays down a rule like this. When it comes to treifas, we learned at the beginning of the parak, we had Ola telling us that there are eight major categories of treifas. Drusa, Nekova, Chasera, etc.
Right.
Only Drusa is mentioned explicitly in the Torah.
Right.
Therefore, the Rambam says, because of that, when it comes to any suffix involving Drusa, like we learned briefly before, and we're going to learn in more detail.
Right?
Drusa means where an animal attacks it and puts a claw in it. One second. When we have a suffix in drusa, and the suffix could even be, we don't know whether there was a drusa that took place or not. For example, the case that we learned briefly before, and we're going to learn in more detail on Nachman Gimel, where a lion went in among a bunch of cows, and we don't know whether it attacked it or not, we have to be machmir. But with all the other treifas, where we're not sure whether there was a treifa there or not, we can be mekel, says Rambam, and that's halacha. So we've had many cases of sekes where we're machmer because there the topic is. We know that there's something wrong. We know there was something wrong while the animal is alive. We're just not sure whether this is the kind of thing that makes it treif or not because you have a difference of opinion in the Gemara or you have a machlokas among the Rishonim and how to understand the Gemara. So in those cases, we're machmer. But over here, we don't even know whether the hole existed while the animal was alive. So we're not going to make it chase because of a suffix just on the off chance that it might have been while the animal was alive. Because after all, most animals do not have chases in them. Most animals have a cheska kashrus. So when we find something, where we know there's something wrong, we just don't know whether it's a tereifa or not, fine, we have to be machmir. But here we find something wrong, we don't even know whether it was a tereifa, we give the animal its usual chazaka and say that an animal doesn't usually have tereifa. Most animals don't have tereifa. Now, with that said, it does talk about in Shulchan Aruch, there are details in it. For example, there's a difference in the shape of the hole. Is the hole long or is it rounded? If it's long, it's more likely if it's caused by the shochet accidentally scratching something with his fingernails or something. If it's round, then it's less likely that such a thing is not going to be caused by the shochet. You also have a difference, for example, do you see any evidence that it happened while the animal was alive? For example, do you see redness around it or blackness or something, which would show that it happened while the animal was alive and then it's attempting to heal or something. But if you don't find any of the above, if it's long and there's no evidence that there's any attempt at healing or whatever, then we can assume that the bird that caused it, and the animal is cautious.
If it's
elongated, and there's no evidence around it of healing or of any.
If it's round,
then you can't be toilet on the bird, because how did he come to make a round hole in there?
A finger
would be he's doing like this. He's moving his hand. No, he's not sticking. He's not going to be so careless as to stick his fingers directly in. He's moving around on his fingers, and he didn't take care. He didn't cut his fingernails. So he actually scratched it open or something.
And that's elongated.
Yeah.
So only when it's elongated.
Also Rashi says he might have been using a knife, for example, to separate it from where it's attached inside the chest or whatever. Yeah, so those kinds of things. They would be evil.
What's the difference in the reasoning?
There's a difference between whether we know there was a reisa in the animal, we just don't know what the status and halacha is of that reisa, versus over here, there's not even a reisa because there's good reason to believe that it happened only after the animal died.
A reisa means
a reason for suspicion that something's wrong. In other words, when you have, for example, a sircha obviously didn't develop after the animal was shed. Definitely it existed while the animal was alive. So the question is this particular sircha one that makes it safe or is it not? Or in all these other cases that we were talking about before. Over here, there's no particular reason to think that it happened even while the animal was alive. It's just because there's no evidence that it started healing or anything. So there's no evidence that it happened while the animal was alive. So therefore, again, being that this is not Jerusa, being that this is one of the other seven categories of Tereifas, then we can be natal on it.
So for Jerusa...
For Jerusa, we would have to be mad.
Always mad.
Yes. Even if we have a topic, whether the Jerusa happened or not, We have to be machmir.
And for all the other ones?
But for all the other ones, if we have a suffix, whether the thing actually happened, then we can be makel.
And that's because?
Because Jerusha says explicitly in the Torah, a boss of a soda tree, the meat that was torn in the field, meaning by a wild animal. And all the other ones, they're all daraisa, but they're not explicitly said in the Torah.
Jerusha is the only one
that... Jerusha is the only one that explicitly says in the Torah, yeah. Okay, let's finish up over here. Okay. Omer of Shmuel Breder of Abahu, sort of Shmuel Breder of Abahu says, Abba me reshe kale de Rafram Haba. My father, Rabbi Bohu, was one of the reshe kala in Rafram Yeshiva. The reshe kala are the ones who the Rosh Yeshiva says his points, and the reshe kala explain them to everybody who's assembled over there. Amrua kamei lahodim marzutra breder amari. So they told over this statement to marzutra breder amari, v'loy kibla. But he didn't accept that it was correct. That he didn't accept this idea that you can attribute it to the bogus. You have to say that the animal is tereif misapek. On the other hand, Omer of Masharshia, but Masharshia says, Kavasei da'avur da'aba mistabra. No, actually, it's logical to follow what my grandfather said, which is Rav Adar Bar Nosson, was Rav Masharshia's grandfather, that he's the one who said that you can be maful. It's logical to go like him. Because after all, we see in a similar case, we had a case in the first parak where you have, if the intestines, we're also in them, if there's a hole. That's what we're talking about as far as physiologically, to say that because in this organ you have a hole and the animal can still survive, that it should be able to. With another one, we don't say that. But here we're talking about like this. With the intestines, we know that a hole in them also makes the animal tree. But if you have a case where we've learned in the first parak, that if a wolf came and took the intestines, later on the wolf brought them back, and we check them and we find a hole in them, again, we don't say the animal is straight. We can attribute the holes to the wolf, that it pierced them after the animal was dead, and then dragged them off. So the same thing over here, we can say that, again, where we have a suffix where we have a suffix, whether there was a hole there while the animal was alive or not. Well, for that matter, you could even have a possibility. Maybe there was a hole there, and then the shortcut happened to make a hole with his fingernail or whatever in exactly the same place. We don't do that. The same way as we make over there, the same way we can be make over here. The same way as we can be make over there by a zev taking the intestine, the same way we can be make over here with the shortcut and the lungs. And that's our law. So we're makel, and we say, because, again, there's no particular reyesa that was known to have existed while the animal was alive. So therefore, we don't give a chazaka of a reyesa where we don't have one. Okay. Just to finish off, by the way, real quick, a side note, why did the Gemara interject with this business about why the reya is called that before getting back to Trey with the reya? Like, it seems out of place. So there's a sefer that gives an answer to that. I forget just now the name of the sefer, but I looked it up before. He says like this. There's a Gemara elsewhere that talks about the idea that bnei me'ayim, that intestines are not something that human beings normally eat. So the question would be, do we consider the lung to be in that category also? Well, if Rabbi Yochanan is telling us the lung is healthy for you, then it seems that it's not in that same category.
Right.
So how can we compare from the intestines to the lung if the lung is not in that category?
Right.
So therefore, we had to answer that even Rabbi Yochanan didn't mean that you eat it. He just meant you make medicines out of it. So therefore,
yeah.
We're back to that.
That's
to eat the lung itself is not a normal thing to do, and therefore the lung can be considered for that purpose as if it was like part of the intestine, part of the other internal organs, and therefore the din that we said about them with the wolf can also apply to the lungs.
Except for medicine.
Well, right. But in other words, the point is that's why the Gemara had to introduce that point before it discussed this in order to establish that we have a basis for comparing between the intestines and the lungs, to say that if by the intestines a whole that we find can be attributed to the wolf that took it away afterwards, and the same thing with the lung, we can attribute it to the bird who was checking the lung.
But you can't go to the butcher and say, I want a lung, can you?
I don't know if you could. I have no idea if they sell lungs separately, but yeah, I don't know.
I know.
No idea.
I don't know.
I don't know what they do with the lungs, so your guess is as good as mine. No idea.
Maybe.